So you've got a river anchored in a reasonably predictable course. Now the question is, how are you going to ship the rice and other goods that come downstream on barges? Friday Night History 77, Season 3, Episode 11. Ishinomaki and the Thousand Koku Ships. The Tokugawa shogunate's early 17th century restrictions on the construction of ocean-going vessels are a well-known part of the national isolation policy. But the thing is, this is categorically not something we should understand as meaning Japan had no ocean-going capability, as I've sometimes seen. Rather, we might borrow contemporary American naval terminology and think a bit about brown water versus blue water. Blue water is the deep ocean. A blue water navy, consequently, is a navy that can project its power well beyond its territorial waters. Brown water, on the other hand, is from the river deltas out to the continental shelf. Japan in the Edo period might not have had a blue water navy or shipping, but it had brown water activity, both civil and military. And it's this category to which the Sengoku Bune, the Thousand Koku Ships, belong. Let me be clear because of the risk of misunderstanding due to homonyms. When we say Sengoku, we're not talking about Warring States Sengoku. Rather, we're talking about Sengoku, 1,000 koku, the measure of cargo they could carry. When you try to picture what an archetypal Japanese ship in the Edo period looks like, chances are you're picturing a Sengoku Bune, because its image has become so ubiquitous in popular depictions. And as for what we mean by one koku is about 5.12 U.S. bushels, theoretically enough rice to feed an adult for a year. Whether or not it actually could is debatable. In the Edo period, fiefdoms' agricultural output was measured in koku. Obviously, they'd be growing more than just rice. That said, rice was what most taxes got paid in, and what warrior stipends got paid in, and what domain's size and their lord's order of precedence in the shogun's court got determined by, so it's a pretty important unit of measure. The Thousand Koku ships were also called Benzaisen. Sengoku Bune were one of the major types of ship that operated out of Ishinomaki in the Edo period. As we learned in last week's episode, the port of Ishinomaki as a major transshipment point has its origins in the civil engineering work of the early 17th century that got the Kitakami River's unpredictable course under control. The goods flowed down the length of the Kitakami from elsewhere in Sendai domain, as well as neighboring domains along the river and its tributaries to the north, and arrived at Ishinomaki on Sendai Bay. From there, they had to get to Edo, and so they were loaded onto the Thousand Koku ships for that leg of the trip. They'd go from there to Nakaminato in Hitachi Province, or Choshi in Shimosa Province, from which the goods would enter the inland waterway network and work their way up to Edo. Mind you, Ishinomaki wasn't the only place that the Thousand Koku ships were based. Nearby Sabusawa Island, in the Urato chain that anchors the mouth of Matsushima Bay, was another transshipment point, as well as a shipyard and Sendai Domain naval base. Readers of my novel Confluence, A Person-Shaped Story will remember the Urato Research Center. I set the center on Sabusawa Island as a descendant form of that facility the Date clan once operated. That's a slightly different story than that of Ishinomaki as a port. Sabusawa Island was just inside the mouth of Matsushima Bay, and thus benefited from natural protection where the port of Ishinomaki was the result of significant engineering to make it so. The Thousand Koku ships weren't the only ships of that size operating on that route heading down to Edo. Roughly similarly sized 800 koku ships did likewise. Some were domainal ships, while others were privately owned. At the height of the trade, the Thousand Koku ships numbered around 500, while riverboats that brought the goods down the Kitakami numbered 836. Domains that weren't along the Kitakami, for instance Tsugaru Domain and Morioka Domain's northernmost branches, had their own ports, but the shipping from there, heading south to Edo, likewise stopped over in Ishinomaki, only furthering the port's importance in connecting northern Honshu with Edo along the Pacific Coast route. Add to that the fact that fishing traffic going in and out of Sendai Bay was a thing, and the fact that so many of the local goods continued on past Edo and thence to Nagasaki, where they were exported to China, and the resulting picture is one of a lively cosmopolitan city. This is a far cry from the image in some people's minds even today of northern Honshu as a wild provincial backwater full of uncultured boors. The impact of the Thousand Koku ships in the Edo period also extended into local religious affiliations. For example, Toya Jinja, a shrine that still stands at Ishinomaki, enjoyed patronage from the Date Daimyo as well as local veneration, because its tutelary deity was said to have purview over safety on the water. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the folk song Saitarabushi, which is a sailor's song that praises the different landmarks around the coast of Sendai Bay by which the sailors would have oriented themselves. I've linked my favorite rendition of Saitarabushi in the blog post that accompanies this podcast. Now, arguably the most famous Thousand Koku ship from Ishinomaki was the Wakamiyamaru, owned by Ishinomaki wholesale rice dealer Yonezawaya Heinojo. Despite not being built for blue water, it wound up there on its way to Edo because of rudder damage and got lost and blown way, way off course. Its surviving crew, almost all of them from what's now Ishinomaki, carried by the Pacific's currents, washed up in the Aleutian Islands. The four who survived and made the journey all the way back to Japan 11 years after their ship got blown off course became the first Japanese people to circumnavigate the globe. In a past episode, we talked about the Russian envoy Rezanov, who in the wake of the Laxman mission tried to open diplomatic relations with the Tokugawa shogunate to no avail. This attempt instead galvanized the shogunate's more direct involvement in the coast defense of Ezochi in what's now Hokkaido. And the four Wakamiyamaru survivors returned to Japan was facilitated by Rezanov, who transported them from Russia back to Japan aboard his ship, the Nadezhda. A grueling and long trip to be sure, but one that is another point of hometown pride for Miyagi today. And not half bad a point of legacy for the old brownwater shipping fleet that operated out of Ishinomaki. There are lots of models of Thousand Koku ships around Japan today, but a few actually full-scale seaworthy examples have been built. One of them, the Kesenmaru, was built in the 1990s and today is on display on land in Ofunato, Iwate Prefecture, just north of the Miyagi border. If you're listening to the podcast, check out the blog post. I've embedded a link to the documentary about its construction. And with that, I will see you next week. I'm Nairi, and this has been Friday Night History. Now, questions? Friday Night History is a historical romp with me, your favorite history dyke, Dr. Nairi A. Bakalian. Our theme is O Hayashi from Paratune, licensed under CC 4.0. This podcast is brought to you by my Patreon patrons, so thank you to Sorcha, Catherine, Emily, Eric, Jan, Bob, Ryan, Sean, Ennis, Faith, JD, Kaz, Rita, Dinsdale, ALC, AO65, Amy, Daphne, Dr. Yakumo, Lemur, Gnarl, Irene, Jesse, Catherine, Katie, Laura, Maeve, Mark, Nora, Sinan, Aura, Bewick, Charlene, Charles, Danny, Deborah, Emily D, Emily R, Julie, Gabe, Jacob, Jax, Jocelyn, Kathy, Kim, Mary, Phoebe, Phoebe Z, Relia, Rueri, Lisa, Susan, Tora, Zandra, Allison, Amy, Andrick, Bruce, Charlotte, Colin, Flitterkit, Jack, Kelly, Lane, Natalie, Fuong, Planes, Sam, Samantha, Vera, Ines, and Zoe. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you so much, and remember, who you are and what lights your fire is worth fighting for. North Star forever. I'll see you around.